This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
ותדבר מיריום, אומר רב ישוע דסיכנו. כשבו הקדוש ברוך הוא לברס אסחבו, מן אודו, when the ריבונו של עולם came to create חבו out of אודם, ויום מסבינן מהיכן לברס איסו. He considered, so to say, weighed up, where to make her from, what limb to make her from. שנאמר ויבן השם אלוקים את הצלע. ולצדן השם built the צלע, the side of אודם, or the rib of אודם, into an אישה, and it uses the word ויבן, which the Midrash darshens to have the additional meaning of his boininess. He contemplated and thought it out and decided finally to build her from the rib. Chava was not created ab initio. Chava was created out of Adam. And she was created not as a duplicate of Adam. It was not the intention of the Ribbono Shel Olam that she should be a duplicate of Adam, but that she should complement Adam. Let's go on a little bit. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribbono Shel Olam said, give you off. I won't create her out of the eye of Adam. Shalitah einu rama, because then her eye will be too high. She'll look into areas that she has no business to be looking into. Belimin harizin, and not from the ear. Shalitah tzavtonis, she shouldn't be a listener. Belimin hapeh, shalitah dabronis, and not from the mouth, just that she shouldn't be a talker. Velo min hayod shalit ha'gunevis, and not from the hands that she won't be a ganavta. Velo min haregel shalit ha'pardoniso, and not from the foot, so she shouldn't be a walker. The Ribbono Shel Olam goes through the body of Adam, realizing that he wants to make Chava out of one limb, and discarding one after the other, rejecting one after the other, is inappropriate, is unsuitable to make Chava out of. Altogether, there's some interesting concepts here. Number one, we see that the first step in the creation of Chava was going to influence her whole being. That if she was made out of the eye, she was going to have an eye in Rama. She was going to have a haughty eye. If she was made out of the ear, she would be a listener. If she was made out of the mouth, she would be a talker. It would create within her an overwhelming tendency toward that particular practice, to the particular practice of that particular limb. We must never underestimate the effect that the origins of something has on the end product. There is no stage of the development that has so much effect as the origin does. That's one of the reasons that we must reject the theory of evolution. Because a human being can't evolve from something whose origins are so inferior. There must at least be in the potential of the origins, there must be the fulfillment of the ultimate. It's true that the human being has his origins in a microscopic cell. That's correct. But that microscopic cell contains within it all the potential for the ultimate fulfillment of the entire human being. If you were able to analyze and to study that microscopic cell fully, and to study the genes and chromosomes and everything inside it, you would be able to see the picture of the end product. It's all inside that little cell. But to say that the origins of the human beings is a monkey or a rat or a mouse or something ridiculous like that, there's just no possible supposed. Why? So that she should have tzniyus, that the overwhelming impulse in the woman will be tzniyus, will be modesty. says the Medrash, and despite the best intentions of the Rebbeinu Shalom himself, it didn't help. The whole Mashin is covering HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a cheeky Medrash, isn't it amazing what the Medrash did? Unbelievable. But despite all the Rebbeinu Shalom's best, it didn't help. The whole Mashin is covering HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shalom Yehebo, and everything the Rebbeinu Shalom wanted them not to have, Kulon Hein Bikshayru Shevoim, the best of them have got it. Not the word, the best of them have got them. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Rebbeinu Shalom said, Loi Evro Eiso Min Ha'ayin, Shalom Tehei Ein Aram. I won't create it from the eye, that my eye should not be too haughty. Chava. Let's take a look at Chava. The first woman, the one whom he didn't create from the eye. See, Bo, where did all the trouble start? Hatera, Ha'isha, Kitovaitz, Vamacha, etc. Kitovaitz, Leinayim. The woman saw that the tree was good to look at, and was pleasant to eat. Hatera, she looked. We'll come back to it just now. And that caused the decline of mankind. The Rebbeinu Shalom said, I won't create her from the ears, that she shouldn't be a listener. The Sora Shemas, when the three men came to tell Avrom that despite their old age they were going to have a child, she was sitting behind the door and she overheard and she laughed. And that upset the Rebbeinu Shalom, he got angry. I won't create her from the hands that she shouldn't be a ganifter. Atignoiv Rochel is atrofim. And Rochel stole the idols of love on her father. So we see, they are thieves, even the best of them. Loevroisom in aregel. I won't create her from the foot, shalote pardonis, so that she doesn't go walking around. All the honor of the daughter of the king should be inward, should be with tzniyus. I don't want her running around. The Leah, what does it say about Leah? Ksivbo, Batetze Leah Likrosse. And Leah went out to meet Yaakov. When Leah did the deal with Rochel, remember Reuven picked some dudoyim, and Rochel admired them and asked Reuven for one of them, asked Leah to give her one, which she did. And Leah and Rochel, Leah said, you want to take, not only have you taken my husband, you want to take my son's Dudoim as well. And Rochel said, no, tonight you can be with him. And Leah goes out to meet Yaakov when he comes back from work that evening. Loi evro oiso min apeh, I won't create her from the mouth, shaloi tehei dabronis, so that she shouldn't be talkative. Miriam at tzadekis, what does it say about Miriam the tzadekis? Cream of the crop. Sivbo. At Daber Miriam, and Miriam talked about Moshe. What happened to her that we have to read every year? And remember every day, remember the Chiyuv, to remember what Hashem did to Miriam. We're constantly having to remind ourselves about what she did and how she was punished. She's an example. It's a terrible thing. What does the Medrash mean? Some of these examples the Medrash brings are negative. Like the last one. Miriam spoke about Moshe and was punished. But some of them are positive. Rochel stole the idols of Laban. That was very nice. Leah goes out to meet her husband, to meet Yaakov. She's talked about only in the highest of terms in the Mephoshim on the Chumash. She's complimented for that. And as a result of that, she gets Yisrochel. Yisrochel was born from that union. Because I'll say it, because Yaakov realized it was L'Shem Shemayim, and the Rebbeinu Shalom realized it was L'Shem Shemayim, and listened to her, and so on. There's no thought for a moment that there was anything negative about that. Amar Rabbi Avo, the Midrash says in Bereishis, Tzofo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shelo Yaso Kavanoso Elo L'Shem Shemayim L'Hamid Shvotim. The Rebbeinu Shalom perceived that her Kavanah was only for L'Shem Shemayim, to establish the tribes. That's why the Torah tells us that Hashem didn't think chas v'sholem that there was anything wrong with what Leah did. That's why the Rebbeinu Shalom tells us that. So we see clearly how in two of the examples that are brought, these were wonderful things that were done. What is the Medrash saying? Let's go through it again. It says the Medrash, Hashem didn't want to create Chava out of certain parts of Adam's body. Why? Because those parts would have been an overwhelming influence. Not the eye, because she would have looked into higher areas where she shouldn't be looking. not the ears that you shouldn't be a listener, not the mouth that you shouldn't be a talker, not the hand that you shouldn't be a ganapter, not the foot that you shouldn't go walking around. So the Ribbono Shel Olam creates her from a modest part of Adam, a hidden part of Adam, and it didn't help at all, says the Medrash. Everything the Ribbono Shel Olam intended her not to have, she had. What does the Medrash want? That she shouldn't listen, she'd have no ears? Did the Ribbono Shel Olam think for a moment to create her without ears? Or without eyes or without feet? No. The Ribbono Shel Olam created her with a full body, with every limb, and they are meant to be used with all her limbs and with all her passions and desires. The Ribbono Shel Olam created her a complete person. And surely the intention, therefore, is that she's meant to use every part of herself. And in two of the examples the Medrash brings, she used those parts of herself positively and constructively. So what's the good? Even in those positive ones, and certainly in the negative ones, there were negative consequences. First example is Chav. Chav sees the tree. What does it mean that she sees the tree? What's an eye in Rama? What's a haughty eye? She saw it, looked good. No, explains the Targum Yonason. It's not that she saw that the tree was good to eat. How can you see something's good to eat? You've got to taste it to know that it's good to eat. She saw means she perceived the Malach HaMavis. She perceived death. And she craved eternity. And she realized that the key to eternity lay in this tree. She accepted the argument of the Nachash. Remember the whole thing that Adam had told her not to touch the tree, and whereas God had only said don't eat from the tree. God didn't say the tree was mukta. God only said don't eat from the tree. But Adam wanted to be marchiker. He wanted to add to the he wanted to create a gezerah. So he said no, don't even touch the tree. The Nachash comes and pushes her against the tree, and nothing happens. So he says, you see, I told you it's all a lot of nonsense. They just don't want you to eat from the tree because you'll get eternity if you eat from the tree. You'll get chokhmah and wisdom. And she opened her eyes, and with her eyes, she was able to perceive what death was and how important it would be for humanity to escape death and to be eternal. The consequences she would sort out afterwards, but immediately she wanted that eternity. So it was because of her eyes wandering into areas which are not meant to be wandered into that easily. Start with Malach HaMavis to look at Malachim, at angels, and at death, and this and that. She started getting involved in Kabbalah before she knew enough Gemara. And that's the Einayim Ramo. That's the haughty eyes which the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted to prevent. It didn't want that. It's a worrying thing. One sees various shiurim in Kabbalah in inverted commas advertised and so on, and I believe they're well attended by women. Women have a desire for mystical things, have a tendency towards mystical things. That the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted to prevent. He didn't want them to get involved in mysticism. He didn't want an Ayin Rama. Says the Medrash, it didn't help. Despite all his abilities, efforts, Chava gets involved in the Ayin Rama. She's involved in these things which she's not yet ready for. The next one, not from the ears, so that she shouldn't be a listener, the Soro Shemaas, and Soro was listening behind the door when she heard the angels tell Avram that they were going to have children, and what was the result of that? She laughed, and the Ribbono Shel Olam got upset about it. Lama tzachaku Soro, why is Soro laughing? The Ribbono Shel Olam took exception to it. Not from the hand, so she shouldn't be Gunevis, and Rachel stole the idols of Lavan her father. There also there were tragic consequences. Because when Lavan came and he said, why have you stolen my idols? And Yaakov didn't know they were stolen. So he said, nobody's stolen them. And anybody you find the idols with will not live. And he didn't find the idols, but as a result of that, Chazal tell us Rachel died so early, so young. That's why she died on the way to Eretz Yisrael. She didn't get into Eretz Yisrael. Because of that klal, of that curse, Yaakov had actually unwittingly had cursed his wife. That was a terrible consequence of the stealing of the trophy. Shelitehe pardonis. What about Leah? Tateitze Leah. Leah went out the crossway to meet her husband Yaakov. And we saw in the Medrash how there was nothing wrong with that. The Ribbono Shel Olam saw it was the Shem Shemayim. And yet there is something wrong with it. The fact that the Medrash has to tell us that the Ribbono Shel Olam saw it was L'shem Shemayim, L'fichach Hutzroch HaKosuv Lo'imah V'Yishma Elokim Es Leo, and that's why the Pasuk has to tell us that Hashem listened to Leo, the Torah has to tell us that we should know there was nothing wrong with it. Why would we even suspect there was anything wrong with it? That means, reading it on the surface, we would think there was something wrong with it, and the Torah specifically has to tell us, no, it was alright. Well, even things that are alright, but don't look alright, are not alright. That's the whole principle we've got of Maris Ayin, of Mechziki Yisure. Very often there are things which halachically are in order, strictly speaking, but they don't look right. And we have a principle that something which doesn't look right, isn't right. Simple as that. You can't say, who cares? I know I'm doing right. I don't care what other people think. You don't have to care what other people think, but if what you're doing gives them good reason to think badly, then you're not allowed to do it. And in fact, another medrash, I found only one source for what Leo did wrong. That's a medrash later on, in Vayishlach, on the posuk of Vatetze Dino Bas Leo, the daughter of Leo, Dino, went out, you'll remember, to have a chat with the daughters of the area, with the young girls of the area, and the same word is used, Vatetze, she went out. And as a result of that little walk that she took, she got raped. And the Medrash says, Les turto anisho ad debroso beito. There isn't a punishable ox or cow until its child gores or kicks. When you see the same midah repeated in the child, then you know that the mother was no good. Les itato zanyo ad debroso zanyo. You cannot call a woman a prostitute unless her daughter is a prostitute too. Then you can say, you can see where it comes from. Strange thing. Amalei, they said to him, in Cain, Leo Yemenu Zaino Iso. Chas v'Shalom, are you going to suggest that Leo, our mother, was improper in her behavior? Because Bino is certainly criticized, but she went out for this walk, it was the wrong time, the wrong place, it wasn't the right thing to do. So she, on her level, as great a tzaddikus as she was, as Bino was. And one has to understand that these are on, we're talking on levels which are beyond our understanding, yet we need to know that she is criticized, that she had no business going out. And now the Medrash is saying that when a daughter does something wrong, it reflects on the mother. And that would suggest that Chas v'Sholem, there was something immodest about Leo Imenu. The answer is yes. Omalei v'tetzei Leo likrosu. Leo went out to meet her husband. Yotzeso mekushetes kezoina. Strange thing. Very powerful language the Medrash uses. She went out to meet Yaakov, made up and dressed up like a zoina, like a prostitute. And that's why Dino went out afterwards. Amazing Medrash. And that, now we understand the other Medrash. Now we understand why the Medrash says, and therefore the Torah has to tell us by Yishma Elokim El Leo. That's why it has to tell us that Shiloheso Kavanoso Elishim Shemayim La Mitzvotim the Ficha Chutzah Hakosavloima by Yishma Elokim El Leo. The Torah tells us that the Ribbono Shel Olam responded to Leah so that we should know that God perceived that her intention was 100% of Kedusha. There was nothing wrong with her intention at all. Medrash criticizes the way she did it. She went out, dressed up, made up, too fancy. And yet, what is the criticism of Dina, of Leah? That she had the makeup on? That she was looking good and attractive? No. The criticism is by Tetze, that she went out looking like that. That's the criticism. It's all on the word by Tetze. That's the word which is repeated by Dino. Not the makeup, not Mekushetes. It doesn't say that Dino was Mekushetes. That's not the point. The point is by Tetze. For a woman to dress up when she goes up. Now we're not talking about Leah, that's for sure. Now we're talking about ordinary people. For a woman to dress up when she goes out, suppose it's okay if she's dressed up when she's at home as well. But for her to look schleppish and schlochish at home and dress up only when she goes out, what does that mean? What does it really mean? I often talked about that. The husband leaves early in the morning,
and the wife's still in her nightgown, no makeup on, hair in a mess. Off he goes to work. He comes to work, and there he sees other people's wives. Ooh, and are they dolled up? Are they dressed beautifully, groomed, watching themselves all the time, running off to the bathroom every couple of minutes to do their hair and to put up makeup again and come back? This is what he's exposed to all day. Meanwhile, his wife does the same. She's now also getting made up. After he leaves, she's also putting up a nice clothes, and she's getting made up, and she's also going off somewhere to her work or shopping or wherever she has to go. And other men see her also dressed up very nicely. Then she comes home to a noisy family and to children and to cooking. And by the time he comes home in the evening again, after he's been to work and to a shir and to mincha and meirig, he comes home late, she's finished. And she's back in her dressing gown with her hair in a mess and her makeup all off and looking drowsy and dreary. And this goes on day after day. Day after day. So he sees his wife at her worst and he sees everybody else's wives at their best. And we wonder why there are problems. There's nothing wrong with a woman looking good when she goes out, provided she's not making an extra effort when she goes out. She's got to look at least as good at home as she does when she goes out. In other words, her standard has to be the way she looks outside. That should be the norm. And that is the minimum that is required when she's at home with her husband. Look, Leah and Yaakov. Look at who we're talking about. And Leah found it necessary to dress up for Yaakov, to look smart. Yaakov at tzaddik. Look who we're talking about, not ordinary people. And the Rebbetzin Yaakov, Leah Yemenu, finds it necessary to be looking smart for you. And she's not criticized for that. She's criticized for going outside looking like that. You want to dress up for him, that's fine. Wait at home, he'll come. No reason to go outside like that. And so there was a touch of not right. It just didn't look right. There was nothing wrong. No other man saw her. She was going to Shem Shemayim, absolutely, to meet her husband and to bring him home. Nothing wrong with that at all. It's just, it looks a little bit wrong. Medrash finds a word of criticism, which on her level was enough to be the cause of Dina inheriting that same midah of being very particular as to how she looks outside, how she looks when she goes for a walk. And that was the cause of her rape. In Western civilization, rape is considered a very serious offense, and it is. And the punishment for rape in many Western societies is death. The Torah does not make terribly much distinction between rape and seduction, because it's not that often that a woman is raped. If it doesn't happen, it happens. But it's not that often that it happens to a woman who's not making an effort to be attractive. Again, that doesn't mean by any means that a woman should not look good when she goes out. But when she goes, the way she looks when she goes out has to be her standard. She doesn't dress up to go out. She dresses up to come home. She dresses up to meet her husband at home. That should be the way a Jewish woman functions. So even in Leah, we started off saying what Leah did was wonderful. She's not criticized for it, but we found one chazal where something in it wasn't quite right on her level. And of course, the case of Miriam, where she talks 100% L'shem Shemayim. Who is she talking about? Only her brother Moshe, not about anybody else. Who is she talking to? Only her brother Aaron. It's strictly in the family. She's talking to her one brother about the other out of concern for her sister-in-law, out of concern for their family relations, out of concern for the fact that she believes that Moshe has made a mistake. And she consults with Aaron to discuss what should we do about it. This is a family matter. Chas v'shalom, she doesn't go around talking to others, not at all. Just in the family. And the Medrash calls her a Dabronis. Too talkative. Something wrong. Not right. Not 100, on her level, not 100% right. Despite the Ribbono Shel Olam's plans to avoid that occurring. What has happened in these cases? Case of Chavo, case of Sorrow, case of Rochel and Leah, and the case of Miriam. Let's learn a piece of Kuzari, one which I think we have learned once before, and which will help us understand what is involved. The Kuzari, you remember, is the debate that goes on between the king of the Khuzars and the Talmud Chacham. The king of the Khuzars is searching for the truth, and he's been through all the other religions and not find satisfaction, and he questions the Chochem on Torah. And he says, "Saper li ma'ase hachosid shobachem hayu." Tell me now, describe to me a chosid. What is a chosid? What does it do? Omer hachoves, the Talmid Chochem answered, "Hachosid hu hanizhar b'mdinosu." A chosid is one who takes very careful care of his country. Meshairu mechalik v'chol anosheo tirfon v'chol sikukon. He estimates and apportions to all its population what they need and what they require. The yinog bohem betzedek, and he leads them with righteousness. Lo yoneh achad mehem, he doesn't oppress one of them. Lo yitzen lo yoseh michelko avoylo, nor does he give anyone of them more than they require, more than is needed for, fit for them. The yimotzeim beis tzorko aleihem shemim lo. And he finds that when he needs them, they are obedient to him. They are quick to answer him when he calls. He commands them and they obey. And he warns them and they take heed. I was asking you, he says, about a chosid, not about a state president. What's the difference? A chosid is a state president. Nishma bechushov v'keichesov hanapshim v'hagufim. One who disciplines his senses and passions, physical, spiritual and physical, umanhigim hahanhogo hagufis, and leads them physically, k'moshenemar u'moshol beruchloim u'loichid id. As it says that a one who rules over his spirit is more powerful than one who captures a city. Such a person is fit for government. A person who can rule over himself is fit to rule over others. And he goes on. And he gives his senses their expression where it's necessary. And he uses his hands and his legs and his tongue. Interesting. Three of the very limbs which our Medrash deals with. Be'inyan ha-tzorich, where it is necessary. U'v'chetzo ha-moil, and in accordance with his constructive desire. V'chein ha-shomea v'harius, and likewise hearing and seeing. V'hargosho, and feeling. Isn't that interesting? All the senses mentioned in the Medrash. Yodo, raglo, v'shinoi, shomegs. Tongue, ears, and eyes. He uses them all. Bacharkin hayetzer, and afterwards his yetzer, he uses that too. Vaharayun, vamechashev, vazikorin, and his mind, and his intellect, and his memory. Bacharkin akrach hachetzi, and his passions, amishtamish becholele. Vehein meshamshim evdim lechefetz haseichel. And they are servants who serve the intellect. And he instructs the passions, the desires, to accept and obey anything which he is instructed to do. Do you remember we learnt not long ago the piece of Rabbi Natan, where we learnt that the neshama is the only being in the world, the soul is the only being in the world capable of being subject and object at the same time. Which means that one can issue an instruction to oneself. We developed that idea a little bit, that one can actually address oneself and motivate oneself and instruct oneself just as one would do to another. We have the same concept here. He commands his desires to be obedient to any instruction they get from him. And they must do it at the right time. And he will use his powers and his limbs as they are instructed without any disobedience. And he instructs himself not to accept apparent superficial thoughts. Not to accept them and not to believe them until he has consulted the intellect. And if the intellect stamps it approved, then he may use it. And if the intellect rejects his initial thoughts and his superficial opinions, then he must discard them. And his passions accept this from him, the Yaskim La Soiso, and agree to do it. Amazing. Sometime we should do this in more detail. But what we have here is the Khuzri's description of the process that the Chosid uses to make of himself a kli for Avodas Hashem. Not even onto the Avodas Hashem yet. We're not even to the area where he actually starts acting. At this point, he is merely molding himself in to a vessel capable of serving the Ribbono Shel Olam. And the requirement is that the relationship between his mind, between himself and his body, with all its passions and powers, is one of a ruler with his army, with his nation, where they are ready to accept his direction, where he instructs the Keach HaChetzi, where he instructs the passions and the superficial opinions and appearances, not to act on those impulses without first consulting the intellect, and to act on the impulses only after the intellect has said that it's in order to do. It's always worrying, by the way, when one finds people expressing opinions. I'm talking about from people expressing opinions about what one should do and what one shouldn't do, what is a good derech, what isn't a good derech, how one should live, how one shouldn't live, without sufficient information. You'll hear people often saying, you mustn't be too thoughtful, be a little bit impulsive also, be a little bit spontaneous. I'm talking even among food people. They don't have to think everything out and calculate and work everything out. You must sometimes just, you've got a neshama, tahira, everybody's got a fine neshama which the Rebbeinu Shalom gave you. You should sometimes just act with it and let go a little bit. Sometimes Epicurus, one has to be very careful. One can't make comments like that without sources, without understanding. This is the Khuzri, we're dealing with Rishonim. That's not the way we operate. The way we operate is nothing is to be done without checking. It has to be checked out first with the Seichel. Now let's look back at our Medrash and we'll understand what the Medrash is telling us. Adam was created with a beautiful blend of physical and spiritual. As we learn from the Chovas Halvovas, he was created with physical passions, desires, because without those passions and desires, humanity would cease to exist. And he was created with spiritual passions and desires. And the Chovas Halvovas discusses why the spiritual passions and desires are weaker than the physical passions and desires. Be that as it may, he has the ability to weigh them against one another and to battle them and to see the thing through. Chavo is not created again from the same way, taking the spiritual and the physical and combining it. Chavo is created from the blend which already exists. But as we said at the outset, the Ribbono Shel'olam's intention was not to recreate Chavo as a clone of Adam, but to make Chavo complement Adam. So the Ribbono Shel Olam wants to take a part of Adam which will be strengthened and emphasized in Chavo. And whatever part of Adam he's going to take her from, if he's not going to use the whole body, if he uses the whole of Adam to make her, then she will be another Adam. If he uses a part of Adam to create her from, then she's going to have an extra dose of that particular part from which he's created her. And that causes the Ribbono Shel Olam concern, he's worried about. What part of Adam can I take where it's not going to be negative for her to have an extra dose? So he takes the Tznius. Tznius is the area where it won't be negative for her to have an extra dose. They'll balance each other out well if she excels in Tznius. And says the Medrash, it didn't help. At the end of it, they still had problems in those areas. What areas? Let's go through them and see. It starts with Chavo. Says the Ribbono Shel Olam, Lo yevro esu min ha'ayin shelot he'eino ram. I will not create her from the eye so that her eye should not be haughty, it should not go into areas to which she shouldn't go. Chavo, k'sivbo, what does it say about Chavo? Vatzeiro ho'isha. And we learned it according to the Targum Yonason, that what she perceived was not the tree, what she perceived was the Malach HaMoris. And that brought her to taking the step of eating from the tree. What the Ribbono Shel Olam was worried about was that whatever limb he would create her from would create within her an overwhelming influence which would bring about impulses which would govern her actions. And that would put her into an unfair situation where her actions are governed by particular impulses. The impulse here is the impulse of the ayin. What is the ayin? The eye perceives. But the eye perceives superficially. The eye is not able to perceive depth. The eye cannot see beyond the surface. The eye has certain advantages over the other senses. It has clarity. There's nothing which can give the human being as much clarity about his environment as the eye can. But there's no sense of the human being which is as superficial as the eye is. If the human being hears something, he's not hearing only the surface. He's hearing the content. You can have two pianos or two violins that look exactly the same, but they sound different because the internal mechanism, the quality of the wood and the quality of the strings, the way it's made, is different one from the other. So although they look identical, they sound completely different. So you need the chush of hearing to be able to discern the difference. The eye is superficial. It gives clarity, but superficial clarity. And the Ribbono Shel Olam was worried that if she was created from the eye, her actions would be governed by superficial glances. They would be so clear that she would be convinced she's acting correctly. Clear it is, but not deep. And if you perceive without depth, no matter how clear you're perceiving, at the end of the day, you're only perceiving the surface. So you can have, for example, a child who looks into a pool of water, and he sees the reflections of the trees and the grass round about. He looks inside, so it looks just like a solid mirror. So he walks onto the water and he drowns. Was there anything wrong with his perception? No. He didn't have depth. He was looking only at the surface. He didn't realize that that pool is meters deep and that he's going to sink down. So with the clarity of vision, since it lacks depth, one can land into a situation of terrible torus. She saw the Malach HaMoris clearly. She saw the angel of death. And she acted on that vision. But she acted improperly. The next one. I won't create her from the ear, that she shouldn't be one who acts upon hearing. Now that will be the overwhelming influence that will govern her action. Didn't help. She listened and laughed. On the basis of what did she laugh? On the basis of what she heard. Hearing has depth. When you listen to something, it has depth. You're hearing right from inside. We've often talked about that also in learning, that when we talk about shmir, we're talking about understanding, really integrating something. And it's also that's how the body is created. The eye is on the surface. It picks up its senses right on the surface of the body. True, it transmits them into the inside, but what it picks up of the environment doesn't go beyond the surface. The ear, the actual sense that it's picking up, goes inside already. It goes a little bit into one's body. It's far, far deeper. So she hears, but still the ear lacks clarity. One can hear with depth, but one can't hear with clarity. You need your eyes to have things clear. My wife always laughs at me when she talks to me and I put on my glasses. She says, "Why do you need your glasses when I'm talking to you?" To hear alone, you don't have the same clarity. You need the visual. And that improves the clarity of the audio. Not just to see, it improves the clarity of the audio. The example I always give is you can be lying in bed at night and you start hearing noises. And then you start picturing what these noises are. You hear it, one, two, it's already a gun. And you can already picture how he's dressed. He's got a balaclava on and a knife in his hand. Oh, now there are two of them. You can hear the one and the other and where they're going and what's going on. The whole, you build up a whole image and you can hear absolutely. You go outside, you take a look, it's a cat. Once you see, it all becomes clear. If you don't have the vision, you don't know what you're hearing. You're hearing with depth, but you don't know what you're hearing. The Sorah Shema, she heard with depth, she heard everything. But she lost, because she thought it was a brocha. And she said, a brocha has to have some kind of possibility. You can't give a brocha to something that's impossible. and give a bracha to a tree that it should turn into a fountain. It's ridiculous. The bracha won't help. We're old already. It's not shy. People, nice people come along and give us a bracha. She laughs. She giggles. She didn't realize they were malofi. She didn't realize that this was nevuah. And she didn't realize. And it caused trouble. I shouldn't create it from her hand, that she shouldn't act with her hands. Rachel steals, she takes the trophy. Good, it was idols which she took. But still, it was an impulsive act. She used her hands, she was active, she was practical, down to her. She didn't start getting involved in a philosophy with her father. Let's discuss Avodah Zorah, let's learn from Masechta Avodah Zorah, and let's learn some Rambam, and we'll see if afterwards you still serve idols. She was practical, down to earth. Take the idols away, then there's nothing to serve. She took them. But that caused trouble later on. Leah also made a deal with Rachel, but she didn't just stay in her tent. She was also practical. Go out and do something about it. She goes out to meet Yaakov, but that causes trouble. And Miriam likewise. Miriam is worried about Moshe Rabbeinu. She doesn't just think about it. She doesn't dwell and stew in it. She acts. She acts with her mouth. What could have been done in all these cases? So we learned the Kuzari. You're impulsive, that's fine. Don't act until check with the Seichel. You see something nice, okay, Chavo. You saw the Malach HaMavet with vision, with clarity. Just check with the Seichel, check with the mind. But she did check with her mind. She went through the whole thing. She worked it all out. She worked out that she was given wrong information. She was pushed against the tree, she touches the fruit, and nothing happens to her. So she listens to the argument of the Nachash and it makes good sense. Everything fits in. She reasoned it out as far as she possibly could. There was nothing that her seichel, there's nothing that her intellect could have told her different to what she did. She thought it all out before she ate. And then she went ahead and ate. So what is the Medrash criticizing her? What more could she have done under the circumstances? Next one. Sorrow hears them saying, she hears them telling, she doesn't know their malach. So what? Who can blame her for laughing? The person gives a ridiculous brocha, a crazy brocha that makes no sense. So she giggles, what's wrong with that? Could any checking with the intellect, had she thought it over 20 times more before she giggled, would that have stopped her from giggling? Would it have been any less funny? Think it over. I am 100 years old or 90 years old. My husband is 100 years old. We can't have children. These nice old people come and give us a brocha. It still remains humorous. You can't take the humor away, no matter how much you'll think. Rochel, had she thought it out, would she not have taken the idols away? She thought it out as well. She figured this was the best way to handle her husband's addiction to idolatry, was to confiscate the idols. And had she thought and thought and thought, it would have made no difference. She did think it through. And she came up with that as the solution. And Leah, who goes out to Yaakov, and Miriam, who's concerned about Moshe, what would they have thought? What would have happened different had they thought a little more? The answer is nothing. They couldn't have thought a little more. They thought as far as they could. So what's the criticism? They thought as far as they could. Let's go through them again and see what could have been different. Chavo has an encounter with a Nachash. The Nachash tells Chavo, you know, this business, God doesn't want you to eat from the Eitz Hadas because He doesn't want you to become too powerful. He doesn't want you to be eternal. And the Nachash goes on to describe Miso, to describe death, the loss of potential, how serious and terrible it is. And Nachash goes on to describe what kind of a world it could be if she eats from the Eitz Hadas. The Nachash goes on to explain to her that that's her responsibility to humanity, is to eat from the Eitz Hadas. It's a responsibility to her husband and to humanity to come after her. She says, but I can't. We've been told to touch the tree and we'll die. So he shoves her against the tree. He says, are you feeling ill? No. Sora laughs. She overhears. Don't laugh until you've reasoned through, she reasons through. But there's still one step of reasoning you haven't explored. That's your husband's brain, your Rebbe. Avrom is your Rebbe. Why are you acting already on an impulse which hasn't been checked? It's your Rebbe. Go to Avrom and tell him. You know, this sounds very humorous. I have to restrain myself from laughing.
look how old we are, and these three nice Yidden come along, or not Yidden, whoever they are, and give us a nice bracha, but it's ridiculous, it's crazy. Avraham will say, 1 minute, my darling Sarah, those aren't just people, those are malachim. That come from the Ribbono Shel Olam. This wasn't a bracha, this was a nevuah, this was a prophecy. Oh, she wouldn't have laughed. That's not a laughing matter. That's something very serious. Rochel. Had Rochel consulted with her Rebbe, she wouldn't have died. That's all. Steal the trophim, fine, but just ask a shayla first. You want to, you feel that's the right thing to do. Go to your Rebbe, go to Yaakov, tell him. This is what I want to do. And if Yaakov would have said, good idea, go ahead, then he would never have said what he did say later on, when Lavan comes and says, why have you stolen my trophim? He would have said something or other, but he wouldn't have said, whoever's got them will die. That he wouldn't have said. And she wouldn't have died as a result of the klolah. So the consequence, the tragic consequence was not from stealing the idols. The tragic consequence was from not reasoning all the way through, right to her Rebbe, right to Yaakov. Had she reasoned through to Yaakov, the tragedy would never have happened. And so it is with Leah. Didn't have to dress up and go outside. She could have reasoned, she could have asked Yaakov a shayla. We had the dudoyim, and Rochel and I were sitting, and Rochel asked for the dudoyim, and I gave her one, and I said this, and she said, okay, I can be with you tonight. What's the din? It was really supposed to be her evening this evening, yet she was quite happy to give it over. Are you willing? What's the halacha? Do you come to me? Do you go to her? That would have been the end of it. She wouldn't have had to go outside. And had she not gone outside, she wouldn't have engendered into dino that middah which caused the tragedy later on. Into dino that middah which caused the tragedy later on. And likewise with Miriam. Miriam was concerned about Moshe. Who was Moshe? Moshe was her brother. But Moshe was also her Rebbe. And if she was concerned about Moshe, the first person she should have talked to was Moshe, not Aaron. And then there wouldn't have been the tragedy. Nobody's accusing Miriam of interfering. Nobody's accusing Miriam of not being having her intentions l'shem shemayim. Davroni, she spoke to the wrong person. She didn't think it all the way through. Because, and here we come to the next step, which is thinking all the way through means not acting on impulse. Checking, as the Khuzri says, with our intellect. But what happens if our intellects are also not sufficient? We're lacking, just as our senses are sometimes lacking information which our intellects could provide, just as our senses are sometimes lacking a sense of judgment which our intellects could provide, sometimes our intellects are so primitive that they're on the level of our senses. And we can't think a thing through properly. We've also been bribed. We've also been corrupted. And our reasoning is not straight anymore. Then what? Think it all the way through. Just as the mind is to the body, so the Gedolei Yisrael are to the people of Israel. We have to consult our Gedolim sometimes. That's what we have to do. And they criticized each one not for what they did. There was a good reason for what they did. Had they thought it right through. And not that they thought it right through themselves, they couldn't have thought any further themselves. But that each one consulted with her Rebbe, the tragedy would not have occurred. Spontaneity is not a midah to be striven for. Spontaneity is a midah that the animal kingdom excels in. Animals act spontaneously. Human beings have the ability not to act spontaneously. A human being has an ability to hold an impulse in check a moment while he goes through a process of checking and then to let it out. And actually hold back. Not to squash one's impulses, not to squash one's passions. Chas v'sholom, we would become robots. Not at all. But to hold it in balance, hold a moment. We can put our impulses on hold while we check their kashrus. If they're kosher, we can go ahead. If they're not, we've got to channel them elsewhere. We can't use them. That's the power that the human being has, to check the authenticity, the genuineness, the correctness of every impulse he has. And that checking goes through not only to his own mind, but sometimes it has to go through to the mind of his rabbein. This is what I want to do. This is why I want to do it. Is it kosher? Is it treif? May I or may I not? When does asking a Rebbe become a cop-out? That's also very easy to see. exactly as it would be if we used our heads without our impulses, if we simply consulted our heads. Imagine what would be then. We would operate without any feeling at all, without any passion at all, without any emotion at all. It's time for breakfast, we sit down and eat. We don't enjoy it, we don't like it, we don't taste it, we don't know what we're doing. Time to finish breakfast, we finish. We act like robots. That wouldn't work either. It wouldn't be us. There we're using our heads in place of our passions. Chazal are not suggesting that we use our heads in place of our passions. As the Kuzri said quite clearly, the head is there to check the passions, not to replace them, not to stifle them and kill them, just to filter them, to allow certain passions through and to hold certain passions back. That's all. And that the intellect has to do. And likewise, when we go further and we have to ask a Shaila, we have to ask a Rebbe or a Godel B'Yisrael, we can't get him to do our thinking for us. We can't go to him with no thoughts, with no ideas, what shall I do? That not. One has to go as far as we're able to go. We see in all of these five examples that each of these ladies went as far as they were able to go. And they criticized only for not going one step further, for asking their Rebbe's. Had they asked their Rabbeim, nothing would have happened. But look how far they did go in their reasoning before they acted. So too, before we ask our Rabbeim, we have to have thought it out as far as we're capable of. So we go to our Rebbe and we say, this is what I want to do, this is why I want to do it. I've worked out, these are the pros, these are the cons, this is as far as I've gone, but as far as I've gone, I feel I'm still missing something. I don't feel convinced that this is the MS. I feel that there might be something that I'm not sure of, there might be something that I don't know. And then the Rebbe will either say, no, 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 what you're saying is quite right, you've reasoned it out well, it's quite right, or there's a bit of extra information that you need, or a bit of extra background that you need, in order that you can perceive it properly. Just the role that the seichel, that the intellect has vis-a-vis the body with all its powers and passions, so is the role of the Rebbe or the Godel B'Yisrael in relationship to the people and to the members of Klal Yisrael. They too have to work, have to motivate themselves, have to desire, crave, think, reason, but to hold in check. And so the Ribbono Shel Olam created Chava, created womankind, in a way where her strength is her intuition. Her strength is her impulse. And very often that intuition and that impulse is right. But he didn't let her loose on her own. He creates a marriage, he creates a zivug between husband and wife. That's a zivug which is meant not to be only a physical or an emotional one, but also an intellectual one. One where she checks her intuitions, where she checks her instincts against the framework of halacha, against the framework of reasoning. And they together check their reasoning and their instincts with their rabbeim to see that that's in order. And the rabbeim check their instincts and their reasoning with the Gedolei Yisrael to see that it's in order. That's the system of balances and checks that we've got, both on an individual level and on the level of Klal Yisrael, on the level of the nation, where we're able to function instinctively, intuitively, where we're able to function with all our powers, with our thought, with our intellect, with our passions, and yet always to have that filter, the ruler which the Kuzri refers to, that's able quickly to subject these impulses to quick checks to make sure are they kosher or they treif, thereby ensuring that everything we do is motivated not only by true and honest and sincere and holy motivation. That goes without saying. All the cases of the women we've discussed were 100% pure in their motivation, but that also the means that are opted for, the method we use, is one which is acceptable to halacha and one which is pleasing to the Ribbono Shel Olam.